So I'm going to talk about some recent work that talks about bosonic symmetry protected edge states. So here's sort of like the the messages of the talk. So so SPT states are a new class of interacting quantum antibody systems that have a finite gap to bulk excitations and have non-trivial edge states, been studied very intensively recently. In this talk, I will focus on a very specific class of these SPT states, namely bosonic SPT states in two dimensions, and I will focus on the boundary of these two-dimensional systems as a way to capture, you know, sort of the low energy properties of SPT states. The reason is that, you know, once, since you have a state that's gapped in the bulk, you know, looking at the edges is kind of a non-trivial problem. And the analysis of that I'll make here is sort of twofold. On one side, I'm going to reveal some of the known results on these edge states from the point of view of effective field theories. And most importantly, that's sort of like the bulk of the work that I'm going to describe, I will construct one-dimensional lattice models that that sort of capture, you know, this non-trivial physics on the boundary. And I'll sort of spend some time telling you how to do that. And I'll make a connection with work of Xiaogang involving group cohomology. And at the end of the talk, I will tell you, you know, an interesting way of sort of capturing the signatures of this non-trivial SPT order on the boundary by applying, you know, a flux into the system and seeing how these edge states sort of respond to the flux. This work is done with Juven Wang, who is here in the audience, and has been posted in late October. And I'd like to thank many discussions with many people listed here, especially with Wukash Sinshu, who, you know, was very helpful in giving me a lot of insights on the numerical analysis that I'm gonna describe here. So I will make an introduction, talk about the effective field theories, lattice models, and then the gauging of those models. So we start from the beginning, which is integer quantum Hall effect. That's sort of the quintessential topological state. You apply an external magnetic field, develop lambda levels in the single particle description, and you start filling these lambda levels completely. And so you get a gap state in the bulk, and while on the boundary, you have chiral edge states. So these edge states are protected by their chirality because you're breaking time reversal symmetry, and you get a quantization of the Hall conductance in units of E squared over H. The quantum Hall effect is a very, very interesting, very rich phenomena. In particular, it is a sort of a tabletop realization of an old idea of anomaly in quantum field theories, where you think that classically you have a symmetry, but then once you turn on quantum fluctuations, that symmetry is spoiled. So on the boundary of a quantum Hall state, this is exactly what happens if you do physics on this one-dimensional edge, and you apply an external electric field sort of parallel to the edge, and you compute the divergence of the current, you might think that current is not conserved, and it's not conserved by exactly the amount given by sigma Hall times E. And of course, the physics involved here is the fact that once you apply an external electric field, charge is gonna move perpendicular to that electric field. So the amount of charge that you sort of missed in the edge is being drained by the bulk. So this is this is a case of an illustration of an anomalous behavior. More recently, people have realized that you can have other kinds of topological order once you put in symmetries, and, you know, topological band insulators have been predicted and discovery a couple of years ago. And so the idea is that in the bulk of the system, you have what you would think would be a sort of a featureless kind of a very common insulator. But then once you look at the edge of the system, you find that there are some gapless states which cannot be gapped out unless you break the symmetry. So in the particular case of Z2 topological insulators, you get a number of Cramer's pairs that are related by time reversal symmetry. Time reversal symmetry here acts as a fermionic symmetry, so it squares to minus one, meaning that right and left moving modes are transformed into each other. But then this minus sign is very crucial because once you try to write down gap opening terms like this, which would sort of like be the natural candidates for opening a gap, you find that they explicitly break the symmetry, so they are not allowed at low energies. And so the stability of the edge states on the boundary of Z2 topological insulator is protected by time reversal symmetry. And you know, experiments have extensively demonstrated that. So, you know, people sort of naturally ask the question, so, you know, if time reversal symmetry is so important for the stability of these topological insulators, you know, can we classify all the possible non-interacting fermionic states by looking at all the possible symmetries and in all possible dimensions? So this sort of work has been done by a couple number of people, and you know, tables like this have been produced, you know, which they try to tell you how many phases of matter you can find given a certain dimension and given a certain symmetry, time reversal particle hole in chiral, and so on and so forth. So at this level, interactions are treated as a small perturbation, so you really assume a non-interacting fermionic description of the system and in order to get that. So the question that that many people have started to ask is, you know, what happens to the possible phases of matter for bosonic and fermionic systems once you take interactions very seriously, once they are not treated as a perturbative effect, rather as a order one effect in the system. So and this is what people recently call SPT states. Probably the oldest and non-SPT state that we are aware of is a spin one antiferromagnetic chain that's been studied by many people. Haldane, early in the early 80s, and then AKLT after that. So the idea is that you understand the many body ground state of the system as a bunch of dimers next to each other, so they form, you know, dimer states. But then once you look at, and that's a gap state, but once you look at the edge of the system, this one dimensional chain, you find that there are some effective spin and a half degrees of freedom living on the edges. And time reversal, so this is a bosonic system, so time reversal symmetry would act as a bosonic symmetry here in the bulk, meaning T squared is equal to plus one. But then once you study how it acts on the boundary, you find that it squares to minus one because you have an effective spin and a half state. So so the symmetry on the boundary is realized as a projective representation, which is kind of a hallmark of these one-dimensional SPT states. So people have taken that as a platform for trying to classify all the possible interacting systems in one dimension, and the sort of like the idea is behind this mathematical quantity called the second group cohomology, which classify all the possible projective representations of a group. So you give a system in one dimension, you give its global symmetry G, and then you ask what is H2 of G, and it tells you how many phases of matter you should expect. Xiaogang and collaborators have sort of extended this idea to higher dimensions, and they have found a scheme to classify bosonic SPT states in D plus one dimensions in terms of this higher, you know, group cohomology HD plus one of a symmetry G. So the message that I wanna give it to you is that So first of all, in this talk, I'm going to be focused on Zn symmetry. So if you just look at H3 of Zn, you find Zn, meaning that there are n possible states in two dimensions. And what they find is that once you look at the symmetry acting on the boundary, they find that in a non-trivial SPT state, the symmetry cannot be written as a tensor product. Okay. In other words, the sites on the boundary, these effective sites seem to be entangled. So this is the message that I will come back later. In two dimensions, there is something else you can do besides group cohomology, which is you can use the machinery of Chern-Simons field theories. So Chern-Simons field theory is a natural way to describe gap states of matter. So you can ask yourself, well, let me consider a bunch of gauge fields, of Chern-Simons gauge fields, let's say n of them, and let's couple them quadratically by a K matrix. Since you're interested in non-trivial topological, in the absence of topological order, namely no charge fractionalization or no ground state degeneracy on a torus or anything like that, that implies a condition on the K matrix that the determinant of the K matrix is absolute value is equal to 1. So the simplest representation of non-chiral bosonic states in two dimensions is given by a K matrix that has zeros on the diagonals, so the diagonals have to be even integers for a bosonic representation, and then on the off diagonals have the ones. If you take this theory and put on a cylinder, what you find is that you find effective gapless bosonic degrees of freedom, right and left moving modes in terms of phi 1 and phi 2, where the K matrix appears here and V some kind of non-universal velocity matrix. So the low energy degrees, so the low energy states are labeled by two integers. They are labeled by the momentum of the bosonic states n, and they are labeled by the winding number of the boson fields phi. Of course, if there are no symmetry restrictions, all kinds of interactions are allowed. And so if you start, you know, considering all possible cosine terms of phis at low energy, they will destabilize this edge, and generically you get no state at the edge. Everything becomes gapped. So what I want to reveal now is how to get all these classes of Zn states from the point of view of the Chern-Simons field theory. That was work done by Lu and Vishwana that I'm reviewing here. So, you know, consider the canonical case where you want to construct a Zn symmetry, Sn. You can imagine starting from a U1 symmetry and just breaking down U1 down to Zn. So you would write the symmetry as a product of Zn generators, where you have the exponential of 2 pi over n, that's the angle of the Zn transformation, times the density, times the number operator. So if you consider that along the one-dimensional chain, you basically get an integral of the density of rho of x. And in this sort of representation, the low energy states are represented by a phase and a conjugated density that you write as a derivative of some second field phi 2. So the way the fields transform is that phi 1 under Zn transformation goes to phi 1 plus a 2 pi over n shift, but phi 2 doesn't change. So you can clearly see that in this kind of canonical way of viewing one-dimensional Zn states, interactions like cosine of phi 2 are allowed at low energy, so they do not break the symmetry. And so generically, this kind of interaction would sort of gap out the edge state, and you know, this sort of Luttinger liquid description would not be the correct description of the system. So the question is, how do you cure there? How do you make sure that you have an edge that's protected by ZN symmetry. So Yamin Liu and Vishwanath have sort of considered an extension of this ZN transformation, whereby not only phi 2 changes, but also phi, not only phi 1 changes, but also phi 2 changes. And it changes in a way that's also real, that also realizes a faithful ZN representation. So P is now an integer that runs from 0 to n minus 1. And so you have n possible values of P, which represent n possible classes of bosonic ZN symmetries. And so it's not too complicated to realize what's the symmetry transformation that implements this change. So you have the usual piece involving integral of phi 2, and now we have a piece that involves the integral of phi 1. And acting at low energy states, you expect this symmetry transformation to have a charge, which is given by 2 pi over n times this combination of the zero modes. So this discussion seems to imply that the operator that causes a shift in phi 2, the exponential of the integral of phi 1, shall then be associated to a non-oscite symmetry realization. So the problem that we set ourselves to solve is the following. How do we actually regulate this field theory? How do you, construct a one-dimensional lattice model, fully regularized lattice model, and such that this low energy theory sort of emerges, sort of appears as a low energy description of this lattice model? In other words, how do we do a poor man's group cohomology construction of these states? So what I want to do is I want to describe you that. I want to tell you how to construct classes of symmetries, of ZN symmetries on a one-dimensional boundary. So so the system lives on a ring. So I have m sites on the ring. And I would like to construct an operator that is a ZN representation, and also, of course, has to be unitary. So there is a natural way of representing this operator. So I look at this n root of the identity omega e to the I pi over n, and so I can come up easily with two operators that that realize the ZN transformation on a given site. So one I call tau, and one I call sigma. So they both to the power n are equal to the identity. So I choose a representation where sigma is a diagonal matrix, and the entries are omegas to all the possible powers, omega to power 0 up to omega to power n minus 1. And tau is a matrix that has zeros and ones all over the place, such that once I conjugate sigma by tau dagger sigma tau, I get a shift in the phase of sigma by exactly 2 pi over n given by omega. So if I represent sigma as the exponential of I times some operator phi 1, I can see that this kind of conjugation where sigma goes to omega sigma implies a shift of phi 1 exactly by phi 1 plus 2 pi over n, which is the kind of shift that I expect. And so this shift of phi 1 plus 2 pi over n would be implemented by a symmetry transformation that acts as an on-site symmetry. So if I would have S being a product of J from 1 to M of tau J, it would definitely implement this kind of transformation. So what I want to do is I want to construct classes of symmetries such that I have this piece, which acts as on-site symmetry, appended by some symmetry transformation that involves sites, nearby sites, J and J plus 1. So let me write this generically as an operator that I call U, J, J plus 1. of the operator sigma. So let me just be very generic at this point. Now, of course, if I need to find a representation, I need to refine my ansatz. Okay. Now I'm going to refine my ansatz by demanding that these two string operators are going to commute with themselves. So this is coming from the fact that at low energies, I know that these two pieces of the transformation, even though phi 1 and phi 2 do not commute with each other, I know that the integral of phi 1 of partial x phi 1 and the integral of partial x phi 2 along the ring are going to commute. So I'm sort of putting that as part of my ansatz. Well, I know that every time I cross a sigma through a tau, I pick a phase. And every time I cross a sigma dagger through a tau, I pick omega bar. I pick the complex conjugate. So in order for this string operator to commute with the string of taus, I need to make sure that this transformation involves the combination of sigma dagger j, sigma j plus 1. Because this guy picks a phase, this guy picks the complex conjugate, and they are fine. Okay, so this sort of refines my ansatz. Well, since I know this better be a unitary transformation, I know this part is unitary. This has to be unitary as well. So this operator can be generically written as the exponential of some Hermitian operator Q that involves the combination sigma dagger j, sigma j plus 1. And since I know this is a Zn variable, this is at most an n minus 1 order polynomial. Okay, so I'm looking at a Q operator that is some phase Q0 plus Q1 sigma dagger j, sigma j plus 1 plus blah, 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 Qn minus 1. I bet you. I'm not sure if you can see that, but I'm just writing an n minus 1 order polynomial. These guys are, in general, complex numbers that I can sort of match because of the properties of Zn variable, but that's kind of detailed. and finally, I want to make sure that this is a Zn symmetry. So if I just take this operator to the power n, it better give me the identity. I know this part does. So this part also has to do the same thing. So I need to make sure that s to the power n, which is product of the j's of u to the power n j, j plus 1, is equal to 1. Well, how many ways can I satisfy this since I'm on a ring? Well, generically, this is very hard to guess, but on a ring, it's easy because because every time that un j, j plus 1 is equal to sigma dagger j, sigma j plus 1 to some power p, where p goes from 0 to n minus 1, and I compute the product of j, sigma j plus 1 to the power p, I get 1, right? Because I get cancellations. So I get sigma dagger 1, sigma 2, sigma dagger 2, sigma 3. So these guys cancel. Once I close the ring, I get 1. So this gives me a condition for all the possible classes of symmetry transformations. And I get n possible classes because p obviously goes from 0 to n minus 1. So once you know this, and once you know that u is written as the exponential of some Hermitian polynomial, I claim you can get all the possible classes analytically. So let me just give you a very simple example of how you would do that for the Zichu case. So you have a symmetry, product of sigma x, that's your usual Zichu transformation. And then you append a transformation that involves sigma z nearby sites. And this guy is some generic operator like this. Now, once you square, you get something that's proportional to the identity and something that's proportional to sigma z. So alpha is just a phase, doesn't matter. So the all the action is in beta. So if beta is either 0 mod 2 pi, is either 0 pi or whatever, 0 mod 2 pi, then u squared is given by sigma z j plus 1 to the power 0. But if beta is pi mod 2 mod pi, so it's pi or 2 pi or whatever, and then you get u squared is equal to sigma z j plus 1 to the power 1. So the solution of this equation actually gives rise to a lattice, a one-dimensional lattice. The red dots are just the trivial solutions, meaning that the symmetry transformation is written as a product of on-site terms like sigma x. But if beta lives on the blue dots, then you get a non-zero non-on-site term u that is written like this.
P equals 0, it looks like the familiar Jordan weakness tree, where S...
For P is equal to 0?
Zero.
For P is equal to 0, I just get this term.
Which is like standard Jordan weakness. So is it a generalization of Jordan weakness tree? You can we think in terms of what Z equals?
It's a generalization of a Zn symmetry. I'm just, if you want to construct a Z2 symmetry, you just... you use polymatrices, right? And then you just get a product of some other polymatrices, usually sigma x in some representation. I'm just generalizing that. I'm just appending this to this transformation, a term that involves sites, nearby sites, and I'm asking how many classes can I build? Okay? And I'm telling you that for Z2, I have two classes.
So one. I'm trying to see some connection to familiar things. Okay.
Yeah.
For P equal to 1,
so if you do this for Z3, you get three solutions, and the and this operator is now written in terms of two complex numbers, Q1 and Q1 bar. And if you sit on the red dots, you just get a trivial symmetry transformation, meaning that this term just goes away. You get a product of tau j's. But if you sit on the blue and green dots, you get symmetry transformations that are non-on-site. So you can run this program for all the possible classes of Zn symmetries, and you can find the general form of the transformation that reads exactly like that. So what this non-on-site term is really doing is really lattice regulating what this field theory transformation is giving to you, okay? Well, the advantage of that is once you have a lattice description, faithful lattice description of that, you can start thinking about models. You can do exact diagonalization, put on a computer, and really use a lot of the numerical techniques to understand the boundary states of SPT systems. So we're going to construct these lattice models by, first of all, demanding that there is no disorder, so we're just going to build the Hamiltonians that are translation invariant, look at the clean system, and also Hamiltonians that are symmetric with respect to these classes of symmetries. Now I have n classes for Zn symmetry. So I have a Hamiltonian per class. There's a bunch of Hamiltonians in the market that satisfy these two properties. We choose Hamiltonians that are of this particular form, so we just take tau operator and just add to this tau operator all the possible terms that are conjugated with the symmetry transformation to all the powers up to n minus 1. Well, there is one strong reason for choosing this kind of ansatz for the Hamiltonian, and the reason is that this Hamiltonian naturally yields a gap symmetric ground state if you are in the trivial SPT state. The reason is, if you are in the trivial SPT state, this term u is just the identity. The transformation is a product of taus, which obviously commute with the tau, so you just get a Hamiltonian that is a sum of taus. So a sum of taus is, gives you a naturally gapped a symmetric ground state, because you can satisfy the tau at every point. So just to illustrate, if you do this for the Z2 case, you just get for the trivial state a sum over sigma x, which is the paramagnetic paramagnetic change obviously has a gap symmetric ground state. And if you do this for the p equals 1 SPT class, you get this kind of Hamiltonian that actually has been done studied by Levin-Gu and Shen and Wen. And had this model had emerged as the boundary of a two-dimensional Z2 SPT bosonic SPT state. You can take this model, put in a computer, and see, do exact diagonalization, see if the low energy states do transform in the way you expect them to transform, and you get the spectrum of a free boson that's depicted here. And but most importantly, numerically, we find that the way that these low energy modes transform under the symmetry is exactly how you expect them to transform from the low energy point of view. 5 minutes, okay, it's okay. We can also construct models for other groups, for example, Z3, that had not been done before. And the model Hamiltonian look very complicated, but again, once you do exact diagonalization, you find the spectrum that you sort of expect to find, that of a free boson, and the low energy state do again transform exactly as you expect them to transform. So this is like this very sort of nasty looking Hamiltonian is just a way of regulating this kind of one-dimensional edge state of SPT states. So we can do this, of course, for any kind of symmetry, since we know how to construct the transformation. But what's that?
It's omega.
Yeah. Omega. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. As you said.
Do you know what is the standard charge for this?
C equals one.
Also C equals one.
Yeah. You can see. I mean, if you compare with this. So this is a very nice spectrum, right? Because I have 20 sites, so I can see a lot. But here, I just have 12. Okay, but there's a lot of finite size effects and so on. But if I look at the low energy part of the spectrum, I do confirm that they transform as they should transform.
So this is purely a one-dimensional field.
This is a one-dimensional. It lives on a ring. Yes.
And the role of the symmetry is to protect the other.
Yes. Yes, the symmetries, yeah. In constructing those Hamiltonians, I have used the symmetry transformations that we derived.
Those Hamiltonians have the symmetry.
Yeah.
Did you do fine-tuning? Is this the only Hamiltonian?
No, it's not the only Hamiltonian. It's not. Of course, one expects that if you change this Hamiltonian by terms that do respect the symmetry, yes, that this gaplessness will not be destroyed.
You expect that this gaplessness is protected?
Yes.
But
the symmetry could also, the system could also break the symmetry spontaneously, but that's a little hard to sort of distinguish in the numerics. I have not done that.
Okay.
Study.
So you don't know if this is robust against perturbations that respect.
If I believe the field, the low energy field theory description, yes, it should be robust. The point is once the low energy fields transform like this, one can show, I mean, they have shown that there are no terms that you can add to the Hamiltonian that respect the symmetry and break this and gap out the system.
Right, but are you saying also that there could be spontaneous integration?
Yes, that could be. You cannot.
So the Hamiltonian would respect the symmetry.
Yes. That's a possibility. Like in a topological insulator, for example, you can break time versus symmetry explicitly on the boundary, and you would have a twofold degeneracy. That's allowed. But I have not addressed that point. Maybe just to finish very quickly. I guess I'll have to eat up some of the 10 minutes. So I just want to see how I want to quickly tell you how these edge states respond to the application of a Zn flux by drawing an analogy with this one-dimensional edge states with that of a one-dimensional particle in a ring. And so if I have a particle in a ring and apply a flux, we all know what happens, before you apply flux, the eigenvalues are just given by the squares of some number of integer n. And then after you apply the flux, if you, you know, choose to work with periodic boundary conditions, you find that the spectrum is shifted. All these numbers n are shifted by something that depends on the amount of flux that you've inserted. An equivalent problem is to, you know, forget about that you had a flux to begin with and just twist boundary conditions on the wave function. So we impose that as the electron goes around the ring, your wave function picks a phase. And so, of course, this gives rise to the same kind of spectral shift. So this is just two equivalent ways of understanding how the spectrum is going to be modified. And I'm going to use the twisted boundary conditions because that's the easy way to implement on the lattice. So if you ask this question, if you take this one-dimensional bosonic theory and couple with a gauge field on the boundary, so this gauge field will couple exactly with the current on the boundary, you find that this spectrum is shifted by so before it was given by basically the sum of the squares of the momentum and the winding numbers. And now it's shifted. So the momentum and the winding number shifted by something that depends on the flux, but also on something that depends on the class of SPT state you're in. So it depends on this integer p that runs from 0 to n minus 1, and also the momentum of the fields that transform. this change in the eigenvalues can also be captured by twisting the boundary conditions of the fields. And so what we would like to see is actually how do we get this physics on these one-dimensional lattice models that we have? In other words, how do you twist boundary conditions in those one-dimensional lattice models and see this change in the eigenvalues of the low energy modes? Quickly remind you of some basic things about twisting boundary conditions. So let me forget about SPT Hamiltonians for a moment. Just consider a very simple system, let's say an Ising chain at the critical point, for example. And this model has a Z2 symmetry that's generated by a string of sigma x and also has translation invariance. So if I study this model with periodic boundary conditions, it means that once I get to the end of the chain, I just identify with the first spin. That's what I have here. So the states are labeled by momenta, k, and are labeled by a Z2 charge. If I want to study this model with antiperiodic boundary conditions, I just take the n spin and I just put a phase, minus one, and identify with the first one. That means just flipping one of the terms in the sigma z part of the Hamiltonian while leaving this guy untouched. A generic way of capturing this twisted boundary condition is to say that, well, first of all, once I change one of the couplings, sigma z on the ring, I necessarily break translation invariance. But there is a way of modifying the translation operator, the new translation operator t tilde, by the old one t times the Z2 action on a given site, let's say sigma x1. And one can show that this twisted Hamiltonian that has, let's say, the sigma 1, sigma m term flipped, exactly commutes with this t tilde. So this t tilde is like a magnetic translation operator that you can define. And if you take this translation operator and you act along the ring, you find that it generates the Z2 symmetry. So the eigenvalues of this translation operator, which are the momenta, the twisted momenta are given by integers plus something that's shifted by the charge. So we just, what we do is for these SPT classes is we have to sort of generalize the story by taking into account the fact that the symmetry transformation does not act as a on-site a product of on-site terms, but actually has this non-on-site symmetry transformation. So what we do is we just define a translation operator, modified translation operator t tilde, that carries the label of the SPT state P being equal to the old translation operator times this term. Okay, that's the on-site term of the ZN symmetry transformation tau 1 times this non-on-site piece. And we just look for a Hamiltonian that commutes with the symmetry in the same way that the twisted Ising Hamiltonian commutes with this translation symmetry. I'm not going to tell you what the expressions are. I mean, we know how to get those Hamiltonians, but I just want to show you the spectrum. And what I have here is the twisted Z2 and Z3 SPT spectra. And I have the numerical data, which are the crosses and the blue and the green crosses compared to the red circles, which are these eigenvalues here, okay? The ones that are coming from the low energy field theory. And if you look at the Z2 case, for example, the matching is very good. So we find, if you look at just look at this spectrum, you find that the first states are four-fold degenerate, because P is equal to 1, N is equal to 2. So you can play with the numbers, and you find that there are four states here. And we also find them numerically, which would be four-fold degenerate. So we find 4 plus 4, 8, plus 4, 12. So we find 12 primary states in the CFT. And these guys are just descendants in the CFT spectrum. And for the Z3 case, there are two classes of SPT states. They are labeled by these blue and green crosses. And again, we find a very, very good matching with these bosonic eigenvalues, even though the system size is very small. I mean, this is 20, but this is 12. So we do get, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 primary states in the CFT. That's actually quite good. Well, I'm running out of time, so let me just quickly summarize. So I describe in this talk effective lattice models for this for the one-dimensional bosonic SPT states with ZN symmetry, and the crucial to the model is how you actually realize the symmetry on this one-dimensional boundary, and after realizing the symmetry, construct lattice Hamiltonians and study their spectrum. This method can be extended to, in the one-dimensional bosonic case, to other symmetry transformations, for example, ZN1 cross ZN2 cross blah, blah, blah. This is some work in progress that we're doing right now. It's actually a useful framework for modeling other kinds of SPT boundary states, for example, with different symmetries and in other dimensions. You know, one can maybe take this approach to model two-dimensional boundary SPT states. And something that we're currently thinking about is whether it's possible to construct boundary states of fermionic SPT states in this similar way. You know, maybe by just, you know, smartly constructing these non-on-site symmetry transformations, one can actually capture a lot of these non-trivial group cohomology constructions for fermionic SPT states. So I think I'm going to stop here. Thank you.
So for this fermionic SPT, I think if you consider ZN symmetry, if according to this super cohomology class, if n is even, you will get a D2N classification, which means there is additional fermionic. So in that case, I'm wondering, in your in certain flux picture, maybe just this phase boundary conditions can be just like mod pi instead of mod 2 pi. So that might be some way to generalize it.
I see.
It's kind of like this that distance has some ambiguity type of framework.
I see. Okay.
We have time for like one more quick question.
So did I understand correctly that the twisted boundary conditions for these non-trivial phases, they're not just a twist. There's something else that you do to the Hamiltonian. Is that right?
Yeah, so in practice, what I do is I just define a new translation operator that involves the on-site. So this symmetry transformation is this, right? So it's got an on-site term, it's got a non-on-site piece. So I just take both into account. And I look for a Hamiltonian that commutes with that symmetry transformation. And I define that to be the twisted Hamiltonian. Like you would do for a Ising chain, for example.
And is it only the neighborhood of some?
Exactly. Yes. Because this whole you see, this guy only acts on two sites, right, at a time. So if you're far away from those sites, nothing happens. But once you get close to those points, then you know the terms in the Hamiltonian change according to exactly this piece here. So yeah, I mean.
Okay, well, we better move on, but let's have the speaker again. Thank you.